Mr. Tango has spoken very eloquently, and I wish I could be as forgiving. But I can't, because this whole thing fucking sucks!
Welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Elliot Kalin, waiting for Stuart to say his name
so that
I could say it.
I was distracted by your headphones.
You know why it's particularly odd that you forgot to say that?
Why is that?
It's our 100th episode.
What a segue.
100 flops. 100 nights. 100 days to have the time of your life. It's the Flophouse number 100.
We watched 100
starring,
movies.
Yeah.
Starring...
Dan McCoy.
Stuart Wellington.
And Elliot Kalin as Elliot.
I mean, we did this part already. But...
Oh, right. Well, but I didn't get to do my song yet.
We're celebrating our 100th episode.
It's a big deal around these parts.
I mean, it would be a big deal if we hadn't also done a bunch of movie minutes.
Yeah.
Our technical 100th. Thing that we put out was a long time ago.
And also, well, I think...
Then also there's some floptaculars, some awards floptaculars.
Also, we've had a lot of guest spots, so none of... Only Dan, you're the only one who's been in all 100 episodes.
Yep. Yeah. I'm 100 years old, guys.
I don't think...
100 years old.
I don't think that's how it works.
So here's the 200. See you guys later.
Was that it? Was that the ending? Stuart just put a nightcap on his head, and now he's curling up on a tiny bed in a matchbook.
It is adorable.
It's really cute.
I wish all of you could see it.
We kind of need to wake him up for the show.
Sure.
So I'm assuming most of the people out there are first-time listeners.
Yeah.
And they're like 100 episodes. What the fuck do they do in those
episodes? Well, I mean, you know, like there are listeners out there who are like, I'm not going to listen to a podcast until it gets to 100 episodes. It
has staying power, yeah.
I want to make sure this thing is sticking around.
100th episode.
Until that podcast has syndication
potential,
I'm not interested.
Yeah.
That's what you need, 100 episodes.
The old standard used to be to get into syndication, it was best to have 100 episodes because then you could run it regularly without running the same episodes too many times.
Okay.
But now plenty of shows that don't have 100 episodes end up in syndication.
Because I think I keep seeing the same episode of Scrubs like every day.
Scrubs, Big Bang Theory, a lot of newer shows are getting in syndication. Sometimes, like in
Las
case of
Vegas,
Big Bang Theory, before
the
it's
show.
Done. But that's Las Vegas. Show
starring a character named Danny McCoy.
Boomtown, Southland Tales.
That's why Tyler Perry's podcast went into syndication after a week, because they just like churned those fuckers out.
Oh, okay.
Churned it out, man. So let's get it. Let's get those numbers up.
So what do we do on this podcast, Dan?
Sorry.
It's all about churning numbers.
Yeah.
This is a podcast about movies.
Okay.
Where we watch a movie that is perhaps not good.
And but perhaps very good.
Don't get ahead of yourself.
Question mark.
But then we discuss it after we've spent a little time together.
Now, normally we review movies that have been recently released and are either critical or financial flops.
Yes.
Usually both. What do we do this time to mark our special occasion, Dan?
We watched a movie that has been much discussed in previous episodes, but in passing, not in depth.
Okay.
And that movie is Tango Ampersand Cash.
Yeah, that old favorite, Tango Space Ampersand Space Cash.
Starring everyone's favorite, Sly Stallone and
Sylvester
Kurt
Stallone.
Russell.
Yeah.
Sly the Pie Stallone and Kurt the Hurt Russell. And who else? Oh, it's an all-star
Jack
cast.
The Balance Palance.
Jack the Palance Hallance. There's Terry the Ferry Hatcher.
Yeah.
Michael J. Hollard Pollard.
Okay.
Who else is
Come
in
on,
this movie?
James
Wrong Hong. Robert Gabar Zadar.
Robert Zadar.
And Clint the Flint Howard.
Oh, wow. Changed up the rhyme scheme in the last...
Slightly, yeah. Who else is in the movie? Who else? You got lots of big stars.
So the skies were dark, where all the stars were in the movie.
exactly.
So
is that the beginning of George R. R. Martin's review?
George R. R. Martin.
George R. Martin is the character that George R. R. Martin put into his novels after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody hates him. He's super racist.
He does have a long beard, though.
What
made us think Tango and Cash? First, before we get into what Tango and Cash is about, for those few members of the audience who have not yet been lucky enough to experience the pure, beautiful perfection that is Tango and Cash.
Spoiler alert.
Why Tango and Cash, Dan?
Well, I think that for all of us, I think we look at it as the apex of a certain type of 1980s filmmaking.
Yes. Some would say the capstone of 80s action filmmaking. In fact, I would say that, and I just did.
Yeah, and you did while we were watching it, four times.
I just quoted myself. Yeah, but, I guess saying, the capstone. They should have called this movie Tango and Capstone.
They
should have gotten Kate Capshaw and Sharon Stone, or Capstone, as I call them.
Solving crimes. Getting into boy trouble.
Yeah. It's a movie that seems to have been made by an alien race of moviegoers who all they know about police work has come from 1980s movies, and then they decided to make the ultimate version of that.
Well, it's weird because this seems to be a movie from before irony had infected filmmaking, because watching it, it feels like a comedy about over-the-top action movies, but it is not.
Well, I mean,
like, it's a comedy action movie, it's not meant to be a joke on action movies.
Yeah. It is supposed to be funny, but it's supposed to be funny in, like,
the one-liners,
the banter that they're going back and forth, or the fact that Kurt Russell dresses up like a lady at one point.
Yeah.
But what's actually funny about it is how over-the-top the action cliches are and how unfunny the banter is.
But everything about, like, the music is super 80s, the acting is super 80s, the way it looks, the way it moves, the editing, the story, the dialogue, everything about it is, like, all the worst things about 1980s movies put together, and they mesh so well together, you know.
Stuart?
I'm just thinking about Tango and Cash.
So should we go over what the movie's about?
Let's spin a tale.
Yeah, so imagine you've never seen Tango and Cash. Elliot's now going to tell you about it.
Okay.
Imagine it's a million years in the future, and
the
most important movie ever made has been passed down in oral history.
Or 23 years in the past when Tango and Cash actually came out.
No, I'm saying, like, through the years, Tango and Cash has been told from person to person.
Oh, yes. Oh, so it's an oral storytelling thing.
Yeah.
Well, you ask me why the stars are in the sky and weather happens. Here's a story that I think might explain it.
I like it.
Thousands of years
ago.
We're
younglings, I'm assuming, at this point.
You're younglings. Dan is an old for his ageling.
Sure.
But you're a regular youngling. So we open. It's a road outside of Los Angeles where police dynamo Ray Tango, Sylvester Stallone, who you know is kind of a business-like professional-type because he wears a three-piece suit and glasses, is driving his car. He's interrupting or continuing the chase of a gasoline truck that he thinks is up to some nefarious business. The truck is being driven by Robert Zadar.
He's a villain.
Yeah, he's the man you may know as having a huge face from such movies as Maniac Cop and Soul Taker. And Sylvester Stallone is told, back off from that truck. We're out of our jurisdiction. And he says, no, I've been on this case for 3 months or something like that. He drives in front of the truck, then gets out of his car and stands in the path of this huge tanker truck, shooting his gun into the windshield.
Shooting his revolver into the windshield.
Yeah.
We put special bullets in it, though. I mean,
I don't think they have any.
But he emptied out his gun and put in special bullets.
I think he
bullets.
Just drives
the power that
a bunch
he
of
needs.
Shells.
It seems like his barrel length, at least, should be larger.
Well, he's got he shoots like a snub nose.
Yeah, like he doesn't. Gun. Okay, anyway.
Especially a movie where later on they're all firing giant ass guns.
Well, they have to build up to the guns. Oh, you start at 10, you got nowhere left to go. Mm-hmm. You start at 2, and then you work your way up to 10 guns.
Yeah, because if he brought out a huge gun, later on people would be like, why is he not just using that big gun again?
Exactly. He forces the truck to stop just short of killing him, and the two bad guys driving it fly through the windshield and land at his feet. There's some little homophobic banter between the two of them. The sheriff's department comes over. This is just a normal gasoline truck. What are you doing here, asshole? I need your badge number. And he says something pithy, and then he shoots the tanker and I guess cocaine falls out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he says, look, it's snowing. And it turns out it's drugs.
You want to get high?
Yeah. Yep. His pithy quip is, anyone want to get high? Ray Tango has done it again. Mm-hmm. He stopped another huge drug load.
And then Jack Palance drives by because apparently
he personally supervises his drug transporting.
Yeah, the evil kingpin always just, just drives a little bit behind the trucks, keeping an eye on them.
And he's got his two hench goons.
His two hench goons, James Hong and another actor who I don't know his name.
You may remember James Hong as Lo Pan from Big Trouble in Little China.
Or if you saw The Day the Earth Stood Still, the new one, he's the old Chinese man who talks to Keanu Reeves.
He's Tia Carrera's father in Wayne's World 2.
He is in a ton of movies. He's really great.
He's basically just Lo Pan. Lo Pan is the most important thing.
You may remember him as president of the Asian American Actors Association.
No, Lo Pan.
He's also played Lo Pan.
Yeah.
Now, Jack Palance is very unhappy. Ray Tango has been a thorn in his side for a long time. And he's also mad at a man named Gabriel Cash, who we haven't met yet.
Mm-hmm.
Cut to... Right? I don't remember. I don't remember the order.
It cuts to the introduction of Gabriel Cash.
Gabriel Cash is a sloppy kind of...
Hot dog.
Hot dogging. Although, the fact... Sylvester Stallone doesn't like Kurt Russell because he's a hot dog. Sylvester Stallone did stand in the pathway of a tanker truck.
They're the exact same character. One of them wears a suit and the other one wears a wife beater. And that's what's different about them.
No, Dan. What differentiates them is their ideologies and their ethics.
So Gabriel Cash... Gabriel Cash is coming home from grocery shopping. He's just kind of a slobby, ordinary guy.
Mm-hmm.
He looks in the mirror on his wall. Suddenly, an Asian guy with a gun smashes through it.
And a flat top,
yeah. And shoots at him, hits him in his bulletproof vest. Gabriel Cash shoots the would-be assassin with a gun hidden in the sole of his boot. So when he points the sole of his feet at people, he can shoot them with it.
Makes sense to me.
The two of them get into a chase.
Very dangerous when he crosses his legs.
Yeah,
he's not a good...
That's what originally happened in that scene from Basic Instinct.
Right.
When Kurt Russell was playing the Sharon Stone part.
I'm glad they recast that.
Yeah.
I mean, they're both sexy people, but it just seems a little weirder with him in that role.
They raised a lot of questions.
Yeah. About sexuality? About your sexuality?
Well, why is everyone treating him like he's a beautiful woman? Right. That was the main question.
Yeah. Why does Newman from Seinfeld find him so attractive?
Yeah. So anyway, there's a big chase sequence.
I mean, he's got really great hair, though. I mean, we can agree to that. Yeah.
They have a car chase.
He's in good shape.
That involves – they're in a parking garage. They almost hit a homeless person with a supermarket shopping cart full of cans.
Yeah.
A Russian guy packing boxes into his car for some reason.
Yips.
And two people having sex in the backseat of a car.
Jeans, compact discs.
Yeah, toilet paper.
Well, Walkman. This is 1989.
Oh, okay.
So he destroys a bunch of cars to get this guy. There's a complete like a fucking gumball destruction rally in this thing. It takes the guy in.
It's hard to really describe how great it is.
Yeah,
a lot of cars smashing into each other over and over again.
Neon lights exploding.
Two totally naked people in the backseat of a car having sex because I guess they were driving around nude and decided to park in the parking garage and have sex there. Who knows? Anyway.
It gets hot out in the sun in L.A.
Back at the police station, Ray Tango has a talk with a woman played by Terry Hatcher, who they both care about each other, and Kurt Russell in a kind of locker room / men's bathroom / interrogation room. He beats up the assassin to find out who the assassin's boss was. Long story short, Tango and Cash both get set up. They get sent to a spooky house / steam factory / abandoned apartment building.
Like a spooky mansion that they have to spend the night in to get their inheritance?
Not exactly, but it's like, the place that that the toy maker lives in Blade Runner? It's kind of an abandoned building full of smoke. Okay. It was basically one of those. They go there and they find a federal agent killed and drugs and money all over the place. And they're being recorded. Something doesn't make sense. They're arrested. Police come in. Oh, no. Tango and Cash have been set up by the bad guys to look like they're a bunch of major league drug dealers.
Dirty cops.
To make them look like dirty cops.
I do like that when the cops bust them, they have their guns on Tango and Cash, who have been all over the newspaper. They're so famous that
they day's
don't even
newspaper. Both Tango and Cash appear on the front page,
and they're
in
only
different
known
stories
by their last names.
They're so famous, it could just say Cash makes another bust.
Yeah,
everyone knows what that means.
Cash was below the fold, though, So I guess Tango beat him on that one.
Yeah. No, Tango is the number one cop.
Yeah.
But they should be recognized by the police officers. These
police
are two,
don't seem to recognize them.
Two most famous police officers in the city. I bet
celebrity
in the country.
Cops.
Can
presumably
you name,
world.
Can you name one police officer?
Police Commissioner Ray Kelly.
Okay. Well, he's a police commissioner. That's right. Can you name a regular cop? He could be a detective, plain clothes.
I mean, I do, but he's a personal friend. I don't know.
Yeah,
for
that doesn't
being a
count.
Famous cop.
No, like it doesn't count if it's someone you know personally.
Commissioner Gordon. Oh yes, he's also a commissioner.
Also, commissioner and fictional.
Okay, I guess.
I bet if you look around, there's a commissioner named Gordon somewhere, and he's always making jokes.
Well, there's certainly
about
a fisherman named Gordon. So,
yeah, he does good work.
Yeah, with that, even just that yellow slicker catching
fish. A lot
fish.
Of fish.
Yeah, and he does it single-handed because he doesn't believe in unions.
Mm-hmm.
So the two of them have been set up. They go to trial, and for some reason they decide to plea bargain, even though they know they're innocent. They plea bargain to get a minimum sentence at a minimum security prison.
Well, it's looking pretty bad for them. I mean, there's a doctored tape that implicates them. There's some other bullshit. You know, they aren't going to get off. And they got to cop a plea.
Yeah. They need to take the years.
Yeah. So Jack
Palance, do the crime, do the time. You know what
but
I mean?
But they didn't do the crime.
Oh, okay.
Jack Palance has set this all up. They think they're going to go to a minimum security prison. Then suddenly they get delivered to the most maximum security of prisons.
Yeah, it's like a hellscape.
It literally is. They're walking down the hallway to their cells, and there's literally people throwing fire at them.
After a nice shower break between the two of them.
Oh, yeah. The two of them have a shower where they talk about each other's penis size and mm-hmm. how they hate each other.
I think they turn all the faucets on, all the spigots.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. All of the shower heads are spraying around them. Is that to make sure they don't get recorded? Is that what we're trying to think? Or
I think that's
like,
because it looks better.
They just want like a real massage. Like they want
oh,
like
yeah.
a...
There's a lot. They,
well, you want to be able to walk around and still have water on your
yeah.
body. It gets cold if you have only
Ray
one.
Ray Tango likes to take what he calls pacing showers, where he walks back and forth under multiple
well,
shower heads.
He thinks better when he's showering, and he also thinks better when he's in motion. So
yeah.
both of those things together. Like if you're set up by the crooked cops, you know, you got to be at 100% with your mental powers. You got to figure that shit out.
I mean, I don't think he was actually set up by the crooked cops, though. I
it
thought
was
he was
set up
by
Jack
Palance,
the drug kingpin.
Look, and the crooked officials were all FBI, I think.
No, because the prison guys are all crooked, too.
Oh, yeah.
The prison board is crooked.
They're the best guards money can buy.
Yeah, this prison hellscape that they sent you, everyone appears to be a bad guy.
Even the guards, the prisoners, everyone seems to be evil.
Mm-hmm.
They each have trouble with their cellmates. Kurt Russell's is a big, tough guy who won't let him use the toilet. Sylvester Stallone's is Clint Howard playing the role of Slinky, a crazy guy who's always making noise with his Slinky.
Yeah.
So Sylvester Stallone beats him up. In the middle of the night, our two heroes pulled out of their cells and taken down to the laundry basement,
mm-hmm.
where they are beaten up and tortured and almost electrocuted to death.
And then also Jack Palance steps out of the shadows for no purpose other than to introduce himself.
And his main goon. He has a Cockney goon with a terrible English accent. Who says a lot of stuff like, "Hey, governor, what's all? Well, I'll send you for a toss. You're a right bird."
I know you're probably thinking he's played by Clive Owen.
No,
is not.
That is a great Clive Owen impression.
Yeah.
I wish the guy in the movie was as good.
But no, I have to say that, like, at that point in the movie, Tango and Cash have no idea who set them up. They don't even know that Jack Palance exists.
Yeah.
So the fact that Jack Palance just drops by to be like, "Hey, guys."
There's been a scene before that where, Cash seems to know who did it, because Jack Palance is Lopez, right?
No,
or is he Perez?
His name is Eve Perret.
I don't know. They say Perret, but sometimes it sounds like Perez.
He thought it was Lopez, one of Perret's goons that isn't Lopez.
Oh, okay, I got mixed up.
Lopez Perret.
Well, but then
his name is.
But then he knows who did
Eve
it because he was set up by Jack Palance's goons.
Yeah.
But he doesn't. But they aren't aware of who the
of
the
this
man
shadowy
of the
puppet.
Is.
That's
puppet
true.
Master.
There's no idea.
And
that's the thing. When you're a game master like that, you need to show the mice that you're running through hoops. You need to show them who's boss.
You mean maze?
Yeah, whatever.
There is Jack Palance does have two pet mice that he kisses and caresses, and he puts them in a maze in the bar top of his office.
Mm-hmm.
And he likes to say, "Tango, Cash, in the maze." Running together, well, Tango and Cash, Cash and Tango. He like it
it's
becomes.
Like he had to build a fucking diorama to explain to people.
His goons are not very smart.
No, well, and in Pounce's
one of them
hands,
dies because he doesn't take the safety off his Uzi later on.
And Jack Pounce, the way he says it, it sounds it's just becomes slam poetry after a while. I tango through the cash of your tangos.
So they're in this laundry basement with steam all over the place. They almost get electrocuted.
They're being attacked. Robert Zadar, Big Face, is just laughing his big face off.
Yeah. That's a lot of laughing.
And then suddenly they're being electrocuted one after the other. And then suddenly the guards rush in, right, and save them.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then Jack Palance and his cockney crony disappear into the mist.
They escape basically just by stepping behind laundry machines and disappearing.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, that's why you have your big brawl in, like, a laundry room. You don't need smoke bombs there. There's just so much steam from the laundry machines.
Just a natural product of a late-night laundry room.
I think that was the original title for Midnight Meat Train. It's Late-Night Laundry Room.
Didn't go over too well.
No. Neither did
Bradley
Midnight
Cooper
Meat Train.
Cooper vetoed it.
Wouldn't it be fun? Would it be scarier if it was on a train and it was, you know, a train full of meat at midnight? Yeah, okay, that's, yeah, okay.
So then they talk about some other bullshit. They meet Cash's friend.
They meet Cash's friend, the assistant warden, who's going to help them escape. Cash Tango says, "I'm not going to."
They haven't even gotten out of prison yet, and it's been for we've been talking about this forever.
Yeah, well,
we want to go over every intricate element of Tango and Cash, don't we?
Okay, well, we'll go through it a little faster. Tango doesn't trust this guy. Cash does. Cash tries to escape. He gets caught. A bunch of the evil guards, being led by Robert Zadar, Big Face, chase after him through huge turbines, and this is a prison that has all these things that it doesn't make sense why a prison would have them, such as huge turbine rooms.
Well, this is another example of this movie being made by people who have only seen movies. They're like, oh, it would be cool if a prison had a big, like, fucking fan in it
they
had to go through.
Let's have an escape through a building. Okay, well, what do buildings have in them so we can build this escape? Mm-hmm. Well, we know from the movies we've seen that buildings have giant turbines. Mm-hmm. They have big basements full of steam and not that much else. They've got
tunnels
all over
the
place.
With, like, water dripping through it.
It's always raining in buildings all the time. There's
some kind of a zip line.
Electric power lines that you can zip line across. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so long story short, they escape. In the escape attempt, they get beat up a lot, and Robert Zadar is electrocuted while attacking Sylvester Stallone with a grappling hook.
Yep,
but they got somewhere.
He does not come back to life like Ernest, and Ernest goes to jail.
He doesn't get electricity powers, you're saying?
He does not. He gets electrocuted and dies like a normal human being.
He doesn't turn into, like, the electric gremlin from Gremlins 2 and get stuck in a phone?
Nope. He's just a dead hunk of meat.
He doesn't get brought back to life by the electricity to be super alive?
I mean, that actually might happen, but they don't.
It's not
that.
Like in...
What about the movie Shocker? Is there anything like that?
You mean the start of a failed horror franchise? Yes, it is. They actually tried to push...
In Friday the 13th, when Jason has that pole in his chest and the lightning hits it and it brings him back to life?
I mean, once again, that might happen, but it happens off camera.
Okay. So, you know, when I write my The Jaw fan fiction, because the character is called The Jaw, I'll bring him back.
Yeah, I mean, of course.
He's going to come back.
He blasts his way out of the Sarlacc pit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And his last line as he dies is, Tango! Which is great. So anyway, they escape. They're running through the streets of L.A. They don't know what to do. Cash goes to meet up with Tango's... Turns out to be his sister, Terry Hatcher, who dances at the Cleopatra Club to escape. Kurt
also
Russell
in front of a giant fan.
Yes. Also, it's like the set for SNL, for the musical guests, like it used to be. And to escape from there, Kurt Russell has to briefly walk through a dressing room full of topless women, then dress like a woman and get out. He's almost stopped by a horny cop who is distracted by Terry Hatcher and then comes on to Kurt Russell. Meanwhile, Sylvester Stallone... goes to the head of the police or something? Like, one of the crooked cops who's high up in the force. He has the best line of the entire movie, in my opinion, which is the crooked cops pull in some cold spaghetti out of a bowl of cold pasta out of the refrigerator.
A nosh or something.
Closes the fridge door. Stallone's right there with a gun. And he says, well, it's clear from your diet you're not counting your calories. You must be too busy counting the money they paid you to set us up. Mm-hmm. Beautifully written, beautifully delivered. Sylvester Stallone learns a little bit from him before that guy blows up. Then Tango and Cash meet up again at Terry Hatcher's house. Their old boss, who believes in them.
In the meantime, Cash has gone to the guy who assembled the fake tape.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And gotten
the,
him
the nerdy
to,
sound engineer.
Yeah. Yeah. Gotten him to confess. So there has been a little actual police work that occurred.
There was a little bit.
Yeah.
The two of them, their old boss comes by and says, I trust you guys. I'll give you 24 hours to solve this case. Figure out who framed you.
Mm-hmm.
And of course,
should have just done that to begin with. I mean, come on.
Yeah, basically. But the first step after that, of course, the obvious step is to go to the LAPD's super weapons lab. Mm-hmm. And meet up with Michael J. Pollard as the retarded weapons genius.
Yeah, I don't know Owen. I don't know if listeners realize this, but every major metropolitan area has a weapons genius, like sort of a Q figure.
Yeah, yeah. Experimental weapons.
Who
division.
Invents things like, say, a robot Doberman that shoots out of its head.
What does he also have? He makes for them a supercar, mm-hmm. but he also has some big guns.
And a fucking giant magnifying glass. I think that's about it, though.
He always has a giant magnifying glass in front of his face.
I think he might have invented steampunk with that magnifying glass that's attached to his helmet.
1989 is pretty old, so.
Yeah. It's pretty early. Well, back then it was just regular.
It was just what?
Steampunk is all about the past, so 1989,
right.
That was back when people still wore corsets, top hats, goggles.
When Jules Verne was writing, you know, his most famous works.
Like Bonfire of the Vanities in space.
Yep.
Space fire of the
vanities on the moon, mm-hmm. and
around the Gremlins in 80 days.
What are they? Yeah, the book Gremlins. Do movie novelizations count as books? Is that a bestseller of the 80s?
Sure.
I mean, they still count as books. It's not like they're not full of words and stuff.
Yeah, that's true. His big hit, 20,000 Leagues Under the He-Man.
I wrote at least one book report on the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the movie adaptation. There's way more stuff in that book.
By Alan Dean Foster.
Could have been. He does write a lot of those.
Anyway, so
they get a supercar with a big machine gun on it.
Of course.
From
which was the last piece of the puzzle they needed to put this thing to bed.
And they go to the super compound of the drug kingpin, which is an abandoned Army Air Force base, which now, I guess, a drug kingpin owns. And it's huge, and he has all these giant construction monster vehicles.
Yeah, it's like a giant quarry.
Yeah, it is a quarry, basically, yeah. And there's a big car chase, explosions, the supervan gets all screwed up, and they run through the place shooting lots of people.
There's a lot of shots of the supervan riding around and then explosions happening to the sides while Jack Palance is watching on his monitor and, like, going, yeah!
Or like,
no.
Ooh, just get him. Arr. Gosh. They get into the big gun room, take some guns. Kashi. And Rango.
Yep.
Dodge Durango. Casey Stengel.
Jack, can you do it again? I think you're drifting, I think.
No, that's good stuff. Rash and Mango.
Okay. We'll fix it in post.
They go into the hideout, and it turns out Jack Palance has kidnapped Terry Hatcher,
sure.
and then pushes the self-destruct button for the building, mm-hmm. because most buildings have those.
Yeah.
They have 11 minutes to get up there, kill the bad guy, get Terry Hatcher back, and they go up there. There's a lot of fighting, shooting, people get shot, explosions.
A new henchman gets introduced who only kicks.
Yeah, he's a super kick fighter. He fights Sylvester Stallone while Kurt Russell fights the Cockney English guy.
He mostly does like those downward kicks. It's mostly him like leaping up in the air,
yeah, like an
and
axe
kicking
kick.
Down.
Yeah.
Through
which
a lot
he,
of
which, yeah, which he mainly uses to destroy glass shelves with crystal on them.
Because Jack Palance loves glass.
Yeah.
He loves glass, crystal, easily breakable things. This is all in his office, by the way. The Kurt Russell blows up the English guy with a grenade,
yep.
which is a callback to an earlier scene when Sylvester Stallone threatened the English guy with a grenade. Sylvester Stallone beats
some
up
bad cop, worst cop interrogations.
They call it bad cop, worst cop.
Mm-hmm.
They are up. Jack. They fight. They kill James Hong and the other guy.
Sure.
They've already done that. Jack Palance is the only one left. Door slides open. Of course, this is an executive office. This is the president of the company. Of course, he's going to have a hall of mirrors right next to his desk.
Yeah.
Behind the sliding door.
It's standard. You know, like, you got to keep up appearances. Like, every CEO has a hall of mirrors right next to their
office. When you run a company, here are the things you can expect standard in your office.
Yeah.
A comfortable leather chair,
mm-hmm.
a couch everyone's afraid to sit on,
some of those,
your own bathroom.
Some of those pendulum balls on
pendulum
your desk.
Pendulum ball desk toy,
mm-hmm.
your own bathroom, shelves of fine crystal, and a maze in the desk in the bar top that you put your mice in, and a mirror room.
Yeah,
a hole of mirrors.
Now, so a real a mirror maze.
So and he's got Terry Hatcher in there
with a gun to her head,
and they're wondering which one of those do I shoot. Well, luckily, while Jack Palance is just giving this endless monologue,
he rambles on to the point that Tang and Cash start talking to each other, and you just hear Jack Palance talking in the background. You can't make out what he's saying. This is the final soliloquy speech given by the main bad guy. Even the heroes are not interested in listening to it.
They quickly decide, and then both of them shoot him in the head.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Because they've instantly found – how did you know? Oh, the monogram on his shirt was backwards. What about – oh, but the ring was on the wrong hand. That's how they knew which one to shoot.
And there's 20 seconds left on the bomb, and during that time, they somehow – run downstairs, run outside, run far enough away from the building that they aren't injured by the blast when it self-destructs.
But mission accomplished. Mm-hmm. They were framed, and there's a lot of evidence that proves their guilt.
Right, and the one thing that disproves it is this one tape that they got from the guy after he threatened them.
But they did go to a place, they killed a bunch of people, and they blew up a building.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So of course,
exonerated.
So of course, they slap five. They give a high five and immediately cuts to them giving a high five. Front cover of the newspaper. Heroes again. Tango and Cash back on the force. End of the movie.
I mean, wouldn't they get? Didn't they get like arrested for breaking out of jail?
Nope.
I mean, what about like killing all those people while they weren't active duty police officers?
No? Nope.
None of that.
None of that.
They're probably bad guys.
Just property damage, murder, escaping from jail. None of the original murder that they were found that they pled guilty to.
Right.
None of those things matter anymore. Tango and Cash.
Yeah, that's not double jeopardy, right?
Well, no, because it's two different crimes.
Oh, okay.
That's why it's not double jeopardy. Doesn't mean you can never be convicted of any crime ever again once you've been convicted.
But they admitted their guilt.
Well, they pled guilty. They didn't admit their guilt.
Oh, okay.
So, the summary of the plot doesn't totally get across how amazing and stupid this movie is.
Well, what about this quote? When the thing blows up, when Stallone goes...
Which thing? A lot of things blow up.
The compound at the end, and then Stallone goes, there's a lot of new pollution in the air tonight, and its name is Perrette.
Yep.
How about that? Did that get it across, maybe?
It's pretty great.
There's a lot. I'm trying to remember any of the other really good one-liners.
What about when Kurt Russell first goes into the Cleopatra Club after paying his $5 admission fee?
There's a shot that there's no reason not to cut that. It shows him walk up to the exterior of the Cleopatra Club, shows him walk in, the maitre goes, hey, $5 cover. Yeah, sure. Hands him $5, walks in. There isn't even not a quip. He doesn't push past the guy. There's no reason to show that.
So he enters the Cleopatra Club just to see the end of an act where the dancer is riding a motorcycle off of the stage.
You were saying?
Just before Terry Hatcher comes out and does some kind of sensual dance that features electronic drums, where she takes a pair of drumsticks and plays kind of arrhythmically to the song.
And she strips off her jacket.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I was going to the point of her stripping off her jacket, I was going to ask, is this the gayest action film?
Yes. Because, yes, and yes.
It is a love story between two men that includes a shower scene between both of them.
And we do get to see both of their butts.
Yeah, there's a lot of them being wet together.
It's constantly raining in the prison and everyone's sweaty all the time.
There's a sort of bondage-y scene where they're both chained up next to each other and they sort of sacrifice themselves for each other.
Their electricity acting was not unlike some kind of erotic climax.
Yeah, and there's the part where Kurt Russell blows Sylvester Stallone.
There is that. But also, the main, love interest, if you can call it that, is Terry Hatcher as Sylvester Stallone's sister, who is a dancer in, a club that I guess you're supposed to think is sort of like this sexy club.
I mean,
but she's
sexy.
Dancing fully clothed. You know, it's that flash dance sort of thing where she's I don't really understand why this exists.
Well, the drinks are delicious.
There are. Okay. I will say there are a couple boobs in the movie, but Sylvester Stallone has no love interest. Yeah, Kurt Russell's love interest. He doesn't seem
that interested.
Oh yeah, then
Kurt Russell dresses up in drag,
He dresses up in drag, and it is the most comfortable Kurt Russell looks the entire movie. You get the feeling when the movie's over, Gabriel Cash is going to put on those stockings again.
Why, like Terry Hatcher's character is like, why do you still have these? Oh, yeah, I've been meaning to throw those out.
Oh, you know, memories
why,
of that time.
Why don't I just do that for you? Like, no, I'll do it later.
I'm going to do another deep cover thing.
You mean undercover? Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, it's down by the docks.
So that's pretty
down
great.
Down by there.
Yeah, it's everything in the movie is also as big and stupid as possible. Like Kurt Russell, the first time we see him running around with a gun, it's a handgun, but it's got this enormous laser sight on it. Yeah. It's like the size of the rest of the gun, and it is hilarious.
And then eventually they upgrade to Uzis because in the 80s, everybody had an Uzi.
They upgrade to Uzis and then to these sort of super machine guns.
Yeah.
That don't look like anything that I've seen before in a movie. Or my time in the military.
Okay. They look like something that, like, time cops would have.
Yeah, exactly. Time guns that turn you into babies when you shoot them, when you do a good shot at them.
It's a powerful weapon.
Yeah. Yeah, this puts, like, a cap on a certain style of, like, a filmmaking. Like, the decade before, like, this puts a cap on it in the same way that, like, Bad Boys 2 then puts a cap on, like, the next decade or so of action filmmaking.
Also, the music in this movie was done by... Was it the same guy who did this?
Harold Faltermeyer, I think, is the guy's name. He's the guy who did Axel F. for Beverly Hills Cop.
And it sounds like someone was like, get us kind of an off-brand Beverly Hills Cop song, but through the whole movie.
Yeah.
And there, you know, it's...
And it just caught fire. Mm-hmm. Everybody's humming that Tango and Cash tune.
Yeah. Yeah, how does it go again?
It's a crossover hit.
No, wait, that's not it.
That's close. Close enough.
There's a ton of stupid one-liners. The characters never talk, act, or think like real people ever would.
Every line's a quip.
Every line's a quip. Characters have whole conversations that make no sense, and afterwards you're like, wait, what? One of Kurt Russell's best moments is he's walking into the police station, and a guy with a pizza box is passing by, and he goes, hey, and grabs a slice of pizza. This is its
Gabriel
own shot.
Gabriel Cash loves pizza.
Yeah, and he plays by his own rules.
He plays by his own pizza rules.
He doesn't care what that pizza's for.
There's the great moment early on where Ray Tango's boss is talking to him and asks him, why are you a police officer?
You're rich. You dress like a banker. Why are you a cop?
Which us, the audience, is probably thinking, mm-hmm. right? The reason is because of the action and adventure.
Yeah.
Not some kind of sense of civic duty, which would have endeared him to the audience.
He doesn't say, like, to keep the streets safe or, like, my parents were killed or something like that. He goes,
yeah, like a Batman.
The action. The action. Like a Batman.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the many Batmen. Like a Batman might do.
Yeah.
But the there's multiple points where Jack Palance's henchmen go, why don't we just kill them? And Jack Palance goes, no. We've got to do it this way.
Because no, idiots.
You don't understand. Killing them would only make them stronger. Well, they're not Obi-Wan Kenobi.
There's a part where he goes, now do you see why I don't kill them? And the henchmen are like, no. Not really.
We had them.
We would never have to worry about them ever again.
Then they would become martyrs to the police. No, they wouldn't.
Then they'd be faced with an entire precinct full of tangos and caches.
Of tangos and caches, yeah.
Bunch of hot dogs. Mm-hmm. Nobody's doing paperwork.
Sounds delicious.
Bunch of hot dogs.
Everybody's stealing pizza.
No pizza would be safe around the police station.
Oh man!
I remember when I was a kid. I didn't see this movie when it first came out because I was
like
8 years old.
Not in the theater,
I didn't see the. I saw it like probably around the time I was 11 or 12, like a couple years after it came out.
Okay.
And I remember, but I do remember seeing like the commercials, and for those couple of years, knowing that like. Tango and Cash was supposed to be like this tough action movie, and in my head, I imagine it being like the roughest, most brutal, like grittiest, violent action movie. Like there was no more serious action movie than Tango and Cash. The same way that like when The Last Boy Scout came out, I didn't see that for years, and I assumed that was like this super tough, like gritty movie.
I mean, it's super gritty though.
Not really. Like when I was a kid, I don't think I realized that there were some action movies that were incredibly stupid and okay. over the top. I thought that like.
Like the movie Over the Top.
Exactly, yeah.
Wait, I'm not supposed to take The Last Boy Scout seriously?
I think you are. I mean, there's a lot of Uzis in it, as I've already mentioned.
There's a part
a lot
where,
of swear words.
The
I think
guy
it had
says,
a record for a while for most
yeah,
swear
words.
Yeah,
I think
words.
So.
The guy says, what was he? He's like talking about something. He's like, I forget like what he's talking about. But he goes, the kind that shred, and he throws like bullets into the fireplace. And it's like supposed to be like this code word for them, but it doesn't mean anything. Like it only means something if he's talking about bullets that are going to explode in the fireplace in a second.
Well, that's like there's a part in this movie where they're up against Robert Zadar and they're surrounded by bad guys, and Sylvester Stallone's like, Robert Zadar's like, this guy broke my jaw, he broke my legs, and Caruso goes, "You broke that guy's jaw?" And he goes, "Yeah, I did. Why? Because I was having a real bad day." And Kurt Russell goes, "A bad day like this?" He goes, "Yeah, that's right." And the two of them punch Robert Zadar together, perfectly timed. And it's like, this is not a bit that they knew. Like, this is – they immediately
– famous punching bit.
Some kind of cop instincts, dude.
Speaking in code, they made up a code and then acted on it.
Cop instincts plus pheromones. It's like, there's a lot of pheromones.
Yeah, that's true. It's very sweaty. It's one of my favorite stupid things in a movie or a TV show is when – the two heroes are surrounded by bad guys, and the heroes start fake arguing with each other, and one of them pushes the other into the bad guys, and that's how they wrestle the guns out of their hands. Because who's gonna fall for that? Like, it's the stupidest ploy, but it always works in TV and the movies.
Yeah, it's the sort of thing that will immediately get broken up by the person with the gun.
Yeah,
like hey, bang.
The thing is, you got these two guys.
That's really eloquent the way you just put that, Dan.
Well, you got two actors like Stallone and Russell who are just chewing that scenery. Like, of course you're going to drop your guard because you're kind of in awe.
Well, I got to say, I mean,
you just want to see the show so badly.
This movie did renew my, I'm a Kurt Russell fan. Yeah. And it just reinforced that because there's some
Dan's
really
a fan.
Stupid stuff in this movie that. Damned if Kurt Russell doesn't actually make it work on its intended level.
And what's strange is that Patrick Swayze was originally supposed to play the Kurt Russell part and dropped out, I think, because it was such a dumb movie.
Yeah.
And Kurt Russell's way better than Patrick Swayze would have been.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing they have in common is hair.
Yeah, and they're both super buff.
Yeah. They got hot bods.
Mm-hmm. Real hot bods.
But Kurt Russell is able to bring the same comedy chops that he took from the Computer Wore Tennis Shoes and the same action chops from The Thing and combine them into one whole.
Sort of like a Superman.
No, that's Christopher Reeve.
All right.
Or Dean Cain.
Yeah, but not Brandon Routh.
And not Dean Koontz.
No, and not Dean Koontz either. Or George Reeve.
What? Oh, but the man had a tragic life. Come on, give it to him.
I don't understand. What?
Give Superman to him.
No, I said it was Superman. Yeah. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
I thought they said not him.
No, not him. This. He's no. Forget it.
All right.
But yeah, Kurt Russell definitely puts more into the movie and actually manages to sell some of the lines.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't sell them well, but he sells them.
I'll buy them. That's all what I'm saying.
Yeah, Stuart wants to buy.
I mean, you walk into the store wanting
he doesn't
to be
not,
sold.
Yeah, he doesn't need to be motivated. He doesn't need the hard sell.
It's just like this is the kind of – every time we watch a Flophouse movie, I'm hoping it's going to be this type of movie.
Yeah.
And then it turns out to be like 10,000 BC or Whiteout, and it's just so disappointing because I know there's another Tango and Cash out there. There's got to be.
Mm-hmm.
We'll keep looking. Maybe in the next 100 episodes we'll find
– Oh, I hope so.
Pale moonlight.
Did you become Irish? Sort of singing that?
Or a mouse? It's a mouse,
Well,
right?
That was from Five Head Goes West, right?
I
just want to say one more thing. Tango and Cash is beautiful in its stupidity.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, we can skip our judgments on this because I think we're all in agreement that this is the best movie
ever made.
Ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like 12 Rounds is about as close
as someone gets, but it's still, 12 Rounds is still not as good as 12, like, Tango and Cash is so the thing that it is. Whereas 12 Rounds is not as seamlessly stupid.
Yeah.
It's stupid, but not as beautiful, not as perfectly so.
Tango and Cash does not have a brain in its head. 12 Rounds has maybe an 18th of a brain.
Yeah. What Tango and Cash feels like to me is it feels like a movie made by children. And that's
just making up a story.
Making up a story as they go along. They have no idea how life works and they're so excited about doing it. There's so much joy that comes through in how dumb it is. So. And there's a lot fewer of John Cena just pointing his gun at black people in this movie, which is a little – makes me uneasy.
Yeah.
Sure.
So before we get on to our mailbag.
Our 100th mailbag.
Oh, well, that's inaccurate.
We haven't done that.
Mailbag number 100.
Like the first episode, we didn't have mail.
Yes, you did. Said, "Dear Floppers, I haven't heard your podcast yet because it doesn't exist yet, but I'm really looking forward to it. I'm sure it'll be great, and Dan will be the best. Love, Dan."
Accurate. So before we get to that, though, I just want to recognize a couple of donations from Daniel G. and a very generous donation from Colin M. So thank you both for that.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your support. It's listeners like you that keep Flophouse on the air.
Yeah.
And when can they expect their Flophouse tote bag?
Well, I have to knit it first. So.
Really, a knitted tote bag?
It'll be a few years.
Seems like a weird tote,
but keep your eye on the mill.
Okay, on the mill? Keep your eye on the mill. What, in case they're making pepper or, or paper?
Keep your eye on the mill on the floss. Anyway, this is a letter titled, "Honey, Where's My Super Suit?" From a friend of the Flap House, Kurt Holman. He says that we can use all of his name.
Okay. His first name is Friend of the Flap House?
Mm-hmm. His first name is Friend. And then his middle name is Of the Flap House Kurt. And name is Holman. But
Friend OTFK Holman.
He says, "Dear Dan, Stuart, Elliot, and Housecat, congratulations in advance for your impending 100th episode. After 100 episodes, I think you can reward yourself with the likes of The Great Bikini Offroad Adventure or at least a good bad movie." Well, we did.
Yeah, we did.
Thanks.
Or did he mean after 100 episodes? So after this 100th episode, we could reward ourselves with
we're all going to watch The Great Bikini Offroad Adventure.
Because
I know you like to watch it alone.
We could devote a couple episodes to that, to be honest with you.
I mean, I could watch it with you guys if you guys don't look at me while we're watching it.
And it ruins the illusion. Earplugs.
It ruins the illusion that I'm there with the bikini girls on the off-road adventure.
Shoulder to shoulder with Willie Tallsalt, shaman.
collecting those lost bikini tops. Boob Connoisseur. I feel like that's a magazine you need to put out, Boob Connoisseur. And every issue, there's a picture on the upper right-hand corner of you with a pipe.
You have like a pince-nez and you're examining a nipple.
Only the best boobs.
So he says, "So I listened to the X-Men Origin Wolverine podcast the other day and decided to check YouTube to see if I could find a clip of Elliot talking about adamantium on The Daily Show. In that endeavor, I was unsuccessful, but I did find a video."
You should go to thedailyshow.com.
Yeah, that's the easiest way to find Daily Show videos. All of your favorites and much more. dailyshow.com. Thanks for writing. Oh, wait, no, there's more in this email. He says, I did find a video called Kalen Superman Videos Number 1, Superman versus Humanities Professor.
Oh, yeah.
Which featured Dan in the famed tights and cape as the Man of Steel getting a stern talking to from Elliot as a Tweety professor. That clip, in turn, directed me to two additional clips that put Elliot himself in the super suit. Now, unless I missed something, these Superman impersonations have never come up on an episode of The Flophouse, which puzzles me, given how much you guys and Flophouse Nation at large loves nerdy subject matter like superheroes. I hope I'm not causing any awkwardness bringing up a youthful indiscretion, which you'd rather be kept on the down low.
Dio.
It also makes me wonder just what Elliot has against Superman. Is Elliot a contributor to Marvel Comics taking a swipe at the central character of the distinguished competition? Or have we finally seen how Elliot's long-rumored racism manifests itself through the ridicule of a Kryptonian American?
Whoa.
On a lighter note, I enjoyed Elliot's take on my favorite bad movie, Zardoz, on the Conan episode, and it occurred to me that you guys could frame one of your ill-defined Flophouse contests around it. Simply challenge your audience to re-edit a trailer of Zardoz, replacing the original audio with the Elliot as Sean Connery remarks. It could be a way to appeal to bad movie and comedy fans who aren't listening to the Flophouse already.
Are there any?
That's a great idea.
Yeah, I'd be up for anybody doing that. I think that's a really good idea.
I mean, our contests are so poorly run that I hesitate to make it one of those.
Well,
but
we could do it another contest winner chooses the movie we
watch. Yeah, sure. I would love to see that. Elliot, do you want to address the matter of the Superman videos?
Sure. Those Superman videos, there were actually four of them, but one of them was taken down because it infringed on Warner's music copyright. That was one Superman versus Man and Superman, in which Superman goes back in time to kill George Bernard Shaw. And Superman was played by Brock Mahan in that one. I used to host a stage comedy show called The Primetime Kalen, which, of course, came after the new Kalen show, which came after the Midnight Kalen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Dan...
capitalizing on the fame of the Kalen name.
You know, the Kalen brand name really packed him in for those midnight shows. Dan was a contributor to the Primetime Kalen, And when Superman Returns came out, we decided to do a Superman-themed show, and we shot four videos using the same Superman costume, which, strangely enough, fit me, Dan, and our friend Brock pretty well, all three of us.
Even though we have also completely different body types, the three of us.
And each of those, the four of them were Superman versus Humanities Professor, Superman versus Man and Superman, Superman versus Metropolis, which is a trial in which Superman is being brought for, up against public urination charges, and I forgot what the other one was.
There's the communist one.
Oh, that's right. Superman versus the Russian Superman in a drinking contest.
Yeah.
To decide who will get Cuba. That's right.
Did different people shoot or produce them? Like, I feel like there was like...
Well, different. Each one was written by a different person.
Yeah, and I remember that.
And they were shot by different people, too. Yeah.
Because I wrote the Humanities one. Like, there's a wild difference in the production quality across the difference.
Yeah, and the Superman, Communist Superman one was not shot by anybody. That was literally a camera on a tripod, and there were only two actors in it, me and Eric Marszczak. And we took turns holding the camera when we weren't on screen, and when we were both on screen, we just had the camera on a tripod, and we shot... I think that's like
movie magic here, folks. Mm-hmm.
It's like a 5-minute video that probably took about an hour altogether to put together, but it came out pretty well. But like, we very quickly drank a lot of water to simulate vodka and got very logy, both of us. And then I had to rush home and edit it. So that was a very quick turnaround, that one. But it was for this Superman themed show, and those shows, of course, have kind of disappeared from anywhere. But the YouTube videos remain as. Mm-hmm. A
vestigial tale.
Exactly.
To your,
Much like if you look up, there are a series of three videos called Ghost Hunters that star me, Dan, and Eric Marszczak.
The stupidest videos you can imagine.
In which we hunt for ghosts. So look up Ghost Hunters.
If you want to.
Grant's Tomb,
if you want to
the
ruin
Yeti,
our comedy
Jersey Devil.
Cred.
There's some good jokes in those.
There's some good jokes in those. They're just, they're a younger version of us.
And there's another totally unrelated video that. Maybe on YouTube, I'm not sure, called The Death of R2-D2, that is worth finding also. Mm-hmm.
Where R2-D2 comes down with robo-cancer.
Robot cancer.
Okay.
And we decide to show him the best weekend of his life.
So nerd stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What do you have to say about that, Stuart?
Wait, what? That we're talking about nerd stuff or Superman?
I don't know. I just wanted to bring you in.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I was always I was an occasional audience member and fan of you guys' early stuff. Mm-hmm. But I kind of like what you're doing now.
All right.
Wink.
Well, this one is called Further Injustices Adjusted. And it's from someone called The Rejustinator.
Okay, as long as it's not another fucking sports email from your fucking brother.
Hey guys.
Hey guys, this is not Elliot's brother, but you said something about the Yankees that I need to correct.
The other day I was listening to your latest cast. It's a regular part of my routine here in China.
Did cast have an apostrophe in front of it?
Well, he's writing from China, so give the guy a break. I mean, maybe he's an American in China. I don't
know. Sure, but...
Let's just assume it's not his native language and give him a fucking break on the apostrophe.
You're about to
right?
say, let's assume it's not a Native American.
Yeah. it's a regular part of my routine here in China and a soothing alternative to the grating, swinging tones of my language learning cast. I guess he is American.
Yes. Wow, that was kind of racist what he just said about the...
It would be a bit of a stretch to say that it has helped me through some tough times, but it has certainly diverted. Anyway, I was brought up short when some pedantic listener drew
it. Look, don't feel like you've done me too many favors. You're all right.
Yeah. You're no WTF.
7 out of 10.
I was brought up short when some pedantic listener drew attention to Dan's secret public shame, that is to say his charming Northwestern U.S. accent. By some quirk of file arranging, the next podcast on the list was Flophouse number 12, Awake, probably Elliot's first as an official flopper and also the first time... Dan was publicly ridiculed for a vocal deformity. So many of your countrymen bear in silence and speech.
By vocal deformity, does he mean the Siamese twin inside your throat?
Yep. It's a Quadio-like figure.
Yeah.
Elliot.
That comes out at night and murders people.
Elliot, perhaps smarting from a Hodgmanian ribbing of his own, delightedly expanded on Dan's disability for some time. Is it pinhead or pinhead, cackled Kalen? Lohan or Lohan, you ill-bred Idahoan?
I don't remember saying that.
My point is, give the poor slob a break. He served his debt to Anglophone society. Your pal, the Readjustinator.
Man, Dan, you're getting better at disguising the emails you send yourself, fellow.
You're right. Dan, I shouldn't make fun of the way you say things. Starting now, I will only make fun of other things about you.
All right. Fair enough. There are some rich veins. I have plenty of personality flaws without, you know, getting into stuff that you can't really control.
You're smiling a lot. Is this like a fucking thing? Is this a trick?
He's got a smile on his face that makes me think he's going to press a button. We're going to fall down two trap doors.
Just like you guys. 100 episodes.
We talked about that already. Dude.
He's gone pod mad.
This one is titled Correction.
Oh, okay.
Is this a Jonathan Franzen email? The corrections.
It appears to be from Brian, like last name with it.
It's like a book.
Yeah, I get it.
Oprah Book Club.
Mm-hmm. I was thoroughly enjoying your 88th episode on the movie Priest with Paul Bettany, and I felt the irresistible need to be an insufferable know-it-all. Please point to Elliot if he is in the room. This guy knows what I'm talking about.
Good crowd work.
That was good. Well, good pointing, Dan.
My correction is to note that the law of gravitation was not violated or ignored when Paul Bettany's character jumps off the rocks in midair. Newton's third law of motion... This sentence doesn't make any sense.
Wow. He proved you wrong about something, and you've got to make him feel bad.
He says, Oh, wait. No, I got it. The law of gravitation...
Okay, I have a new thing to make fun of you about.
All right, if you would shut up, I could
just that you're
this.
Too dumb to read a letter.
It's an interesting use of syntax. My correction is to note that the law of gravitation was not violated or ignored when Paul Bettany's character jumps off the rocks in midair. Newton's third law of motion was, period. It is technically possible, though incredibly improbable, for the priest to perform this feat, though the rock should have shot downwards, away from his foot, and probably deep into the ground, or been pulverized, or both. Brian, last name withheld. So there you go.
So we should give this movie another look-see, huh?
Yeah.
I didn't see that one.
It's probably
so.
A good movie now.
Yeah. Usually that's the way it works.
Mm-hmm.
If we fuck up,
turns out the movie was great.
It's a good movie. Yeah.
Unfortunately, they get an automatic good, yeah, because mm-hmm. it's our mistake.
We need to put that on the DVD cover.
Yeah.
A good movie.
The Flophouse. So thank
you. That's going to improve video rentals from whatever video chain.
Mm-hmm. Well, Paul Bettany was very angry at us, from what I understand.
He seems like a pretty chill guy, except for all the he takes a lot of action movie roles.
Yeah. Well, that's how he gets out his aggression.
Okay.
So this last email is from John Lasseter.
The last email of our 100th episode?
Elliot's gently placing his hand on my hand as if to console me.
Yeah. It's okay, Dan. They're there.
No, I don't understand.
There. Stuart, touch his other hand.
Okay, that's okay. Now it's on the table.
Now both of them are.
They're there.
Patting my hand.
Say they're
gently.
There, Stuart.
They're there, dude.
They're there.
This does actually make me feel better.
They're there. Okay, all now right, take your hand away.
Okay.
Now put it back on there again.
Okay.
Okay, now take your hand away again. Okay, now just me. Okay, now just you. Okay, now rub your hand against his hand. Just the
Wait,
back.
Wait, what are we doing
Rub
again?
The back of your hand against the back of his hand.
It's starting to feel a little weird. So this last email is from John Last Name Withheld, and it's a short email. It says, I hereby commission Elliot to write a prequel to In Time featuring 7 pounds that posits a world where time is weight.
Okay, interesting. I like this idea. I mean, a commission implies I'm going to get paid for this, but...
There are no financial details, so I can't help you there.
I guess we'll have to work those out. But I like the idea that 7 pounds caused In Time to take place. Probably some – he probably broke the time-space weight.
We're still talking about the villain character we invented and not the movie 7 pounds.
Oh, wait. Is it the movie?
I assume we're talking about the villain 7 pounds.
Yeah,
who commits 7 pounds related crimes.
Okay. Just clarifying for listeners who have not heard the
7 pounds
podcast.
For anyone who didn't listen to 7 pounds.
For anyone who just joined us because of the longevity rule that they had employed as per the beginning of the podcast.
7 pounds – is a Batman villain who commits 7 pounds related crimes. It's pretty much. What does he sound like, Stuart?
I'm not the one doing the voice.
Dan, what does he sound like?
7 pounds?
Yeah, kind of Crypt Keeper-y.
Yeah, basically the Crypt Keeper.
Mm-hmm. Like he might steal a 7 pound diamond, or he might steal like 7 pounds from like an English guy back when they weren't on the euro.
Yeah, or 7 Paula Poundstones.
Mm-hmm.
Or 7 Ezra Pound books. Well, if it, like a 7-pound baby he'd kidnap, it was like the heir to the 7 pounds fortune.
Yes.
He would take the pound key off 7 phones.
And I think Batman would probably know who was the culprit.
Who? Mm-hmm. Someone stole 28 quarter pounders. Who could it be? Of course.
You know, you might drop a 7-pound like a sandbag on Batman in the back of a theater.
Yeah.
Probably won't hurt him, but
it would irritate him.
Depends on how high that it's being dropped from.
Okay, like from the top of the Gotham State Building or whatever?
Yeah.
Gotham State Building, yeah. Backstage.
Why don't you get to work on that?
Got some plans. You got some cooking in there.
I do have a paying day job, but I will quit it so I could do this.
So, guys, now we're to the last segment of our regular show.
Our 100th episode.
Recommendations, a movie that you saw perhaps recently.
Recommendation.
I know. Yeah. I'm totally got 300th recommendation. There's three of us, except for often we recommend multiple things.
And sometimes we don't do recommendations because the show's running long.
God, man. We are not running a tight ship at all.
No. Hey, we don't edit it. That's you. Yeah. High five, Stuart. Making Dan do extra work.
So if anyone has a recommendation they want to jump in with.
Elliot's all ready for it.
Well, I'll recommend a movie. The movie I want to recommend is an English – I guess it's not an English action movie so much as it's an American action movie that was directed by an Englishman and starred a lot of English people. From the 1960s, a movie called Dark of the Sun, which stars Rod Taylor and Jim Brown as two mercenaries who have to go into an African nation that's currently experiencing a Civil War guerrilla uprising to – save the staff and diamonds of a diamond company. And so they need to get through basically a brutal civil war, get a bunch of people onto a train and a satchel full of diamonds and take it back. And it is, for the most part, nonstop action. And especially for a movie from the mid-60s, it is super violent. And the body count in it is what you would expect from an 80s movie. Just like they shoot tons and tons of people. There's a scene where Rod Taylor fights a German wielding a chainsaw. There's a lot of crazy stuff in it. And it's a good action suspense movie that's surprisingly brutal for the time it was made. So I recommend that. Dark of the Sun.
I'd like to what I'll recommend just came to me. Last night I hosted a bad movie screening, which I do from time to time.
I don't recommend that.
I don't just.
He's recommending going to Dan's apartment and making him show a bad movie.
It is a pretty great experience. But I just want to say, I don't just talk the talk when it comes to bad movies. I walk the walk. I enjoy screening them for
not
flophouse reasons.
Okay, keep going.
And I screen the
what
movie.
What Dan's saying is it's a sickness.
Birdemic Shock and Terror, which is a movie that has gotten a lot of cult attention as a bad movie. I feel like it's the next The Room. Sort of, just as The Room was the next Troll 2,
Plan 9?
Plan 9.
What was Plan 9 the next of?
I think that irony hadn't been invented then.
Oh, yeah, maybe. People only enjoyed things
for their
when they
merits.
Were good. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Birdemic is a pretty amazing movie. It's a movie about...
hey, you ever seen the movie The Birds?
Yeah.
That's Birdemic.
That. Except for there's 40 minutes of driving around and a guy like making a $1 million deal at his nondescript tech company and talking about that.
And he gets solar cells put on his house.
Yeah, and he goes on dates with a girl that he just met in front of various green screens. And then with no foreshadowing at all of a sudden a bunch of birds show up and start dive bombing things and After Effects explosions start appearing on things.
And are these real birds?
No, these are looped animations of birds that are just sort of hovering in the air. They're flapping their wings, but the only bird that can actually hover in the air is the hummingbird. And these are not hummingbirds. These are like big hawks.
Ornithologist over here.
Mr. Birds over here. Birdman of Dancatraz.
And this movie has a weird green message. It is a pro-environmental message. And it's the sort of thing that's like, you're not helping the cause by making Birdemic and putting that on
the world. Let me ask you this. The female star of the movie, do you see her in her underpants?
You do see her in her underpants.
Okay.
In a sort of a thong panty, and she is certainly very attractive. She's one of the few people in the movie that I felt like could possibly be a passable actress, too, if she was in a better movie.
Sure. If she's going to be in her panties, I mean...
Underpants.
I mean, I'd like to point out
underpants.
That Mr. Elliot asked a leading question that brought us to the panties. It wasn't me bringing up panties.
I knew you wanted to talk once. About it.
So
he was chomping at the bit over here.
Champing.
So
champion of the bit.
I'm going to recommend a movie I saw recently. Was actually an Academy Award nominee a few years ago, and that's Winter's Bone. Winter's Bone with... What's her name? Jennifer
Lawrence.
Yeah, yeah. So
and John Hawks.
And John Hawks, who's great. And if you want to see a movie with tons of chicks wearing like hunting jackets and sweaters with animals and shit on them, so this is the movie for you.
Is that the IMDb keyword yeah. that you put in for it?
Chicks wearing hunting jackets.
Yeah, so if you're really into hunting jacket chicks, check out Winter's
They're just not
Bone.
Making enough movies for me, a guy who likes chicks and hunting jackets and animal sweaters.
About, or? Yes.
Does it have a plot? Or is it?
Yeah, it's about a woman stuck in a man's world. And
I mean, I guess that's
I mean,
accurate.
Also, like 9 to 5 could be described that way.
Thematically, yes.
Alien 3 could be described that way.
There's some jokes. There's a fair amount of tension.
You were going out of your way not to say what this. Did you watch this movie? Did you watch it in mute?
I didn't want to fast forward to it. I was hoping to see a chicken panty. No. It's about a young girl about a young girl who has to raise her younger brother and sister, and at the same time find her father. Because her father needs to, what is it, is up for bail, or he's jumped his bail.
He jumped bail, and as collateral for the bail, he put their house. So she needs to find him.
Yeah, she has to track it down. And they find a way to take a modern setting and still make it feel almost like a Western of this young woman having to track her father down through these increasingly creepy parts of their town.
And to do a noir story that's not set in a city, but in a rural location.
Yeah. So it's pretty great.
It's really
good recommendation.
There's a lot of chicks in hunting jackets. And what kind of sweaters did you say?
Yeah, one of them
with animals on them.
One of them skins a squirrel at one point. So
hey,
you got that.
Don't give away all the good stuff.
Yeah, save some for the ticket buyers.
So, guys, 100 episodes.
100 laughs.
We did it.
100 episodes, 100 laughs.
AFI's Flophouse.
So 200 more, right?
One of the next 100 have in store.
We're all a couple of gray balls over
well,
here.
Something tells me we're going to be watching Marmaduke eventually.
And
Bucky Larson and maybe Smurfs 3, if our fans have anything to say about it.
All right. Well, until we watch all those movies, I suppose I should sign off and say that for the Flophouse, I've been Dan McCoy.
I've been Stuart Wellington.
And I am still Elliot Kalin.
Goodbye.
I think it's pretty amazing that we haven't had to watch a single one of the Alvin and the Chipmunks movies.
Nobody makes us do this.
That we haven't been forced into watching it. And it was really tender. I cooked it for like 7 hours. It's just like, it hits your mouth and just melts.
It's
juicy. Yeah, it's actually a brisket that's sculpted out of ice.
Ice brisket.